Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Having missing or damaged teeth is far more serious than a simple cosmetic problem. Debilitating pain, social stigma, low educational achievement, and even stunted job prospects can result from dental problems, believe it or not. My guest this hour is Mary Otto. She's the author of Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. And for this book, the award-winning former Washington Post journalist undertook a multi-year investigation into the largely unexamined state of oral health here in the United States. For instance, it turns out roughly a third of the people living in the U.S. face significant barriers to even the most basic dental care. Mary Otto joins us for the hour. Mary, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for the hour. We want to reach out to our listeners. Your teeth have a story to tell? Perhaps have the state of your teeth or access to dental care or lack of access to dental care shaped the course of your life? Join our conversation this hour, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We mentioned, too, Mary, that you are the oral health topic leader for the Association of Healthcare Journalists. Let's go back to your inspiration for this, writing this book, Washington Post reporter, one story that focused on the death of a seventh grader. Would you tell us that story?
You're right, Ben. That's really what got me started on this subject. It was about 10 years ago, in 2007, actually, I was standing at the hospital bedside of this 12-year-old boy named Diamante Driver. He was a Maryland child. He and his brothers were Medicaid beneficiaries in the state. And Diamante was in the hospital because he had suffered very serious complications from an infected tooth, an abscess. The doctors told his mother that the bacteria from this infected tooth had spread to his brain, and he had two brain surgeries. He was in hospital for 6 weeks, and this $2,500 worth of care wasn't enough to save him. He died. And I wrote about his death, and it turned out to be that there was a lot more to write about the shortage of care. I mean, his mother had actually been looking for dental care for his younger brother when Diamante got into trouble, and mm-hmm. had been really having a hard time finding any. And it's a significant issue around the country, the shortage of care for Medicaid beneficiaries.
Right. So tell us a little bit more. As you dug down into this, you found out that Diamante's case was not an isolated incident here, that a significant number of in our population just lack really basic dental care.
That's right. As you said, about a third of Americans face significant barriers getting routine dental care, preventive care, restorative care. And it could be that they have inadequate benefits. They could be on a public program like Medicaid. They may lack money to pay out of pocket for care. And they also, in many places, including, I'm sure, in Iowa, they live in rural places where there just aren't enough dental providers. There are an estimated 49 million Americans live in what are federally designated as dental professional shortage areas. So they travel miles and miles to get a simple dental appointment in many places.
And that can be enough to put off a dental. We know there we find a lot of people find plenty of reasons to put off the dental examination. if nothing's hurting,
yeah.
And you don't have any real problems, this preventative care gets pushed off to the side. And then add to that, you're in a rural part of the country, a rural part of Iowa, and you say, well, if I have to drive 30, 40 miles for that, that's another reason not to, right?
That's right. That's right. And, there's so many needs that are all competing for our attention on most days. And, yes, if you can put off a day loss to a travel for an appointment or or, you know, you may not get paid if you take that day off. I mean, some people don't even have the option, you know, of taking a day off from work to take care of these kinds of things. So
it is the working poor, those mm-hmm. who can little afford, they take a day off. Their employer doesn't give them time off to mm-hmm. see the dentist or to take a child to see the dentist. So it is exactly the people who have the worst dental care who can't afford, for a number of reasons, to see the dentist.
Very well said. That's mm-hmm. right. That's true.
Tell us, Mary, in broad terms, what can you say about the impact of our dental health on our overall bodily health?
Well, there are many connections, you know, tragic ones, like, you know, with Diamante, who you know, died of you know, this infection. Also, over 1 million Americans a year end up in emergency rooms because of, you know, toothaches and other kinds of non-traumatic dental problems, because they're looking for dental care, but they don't really have a regular provider. So oral health can, you know, poor oral health can cause pain that's debilitating. But then there are also more subtle connections between oral health and overall health. You know, of course, if you've lost your teeth or you're having trouble eating, your nutrition suffers. There's some significant advances going on in our understanding of how oral infections, whether it's gum disease or other kinds of oral infections, might affect our cardiovascular health, although they're still, you know, they haven't nailed down a clear cause and effect relationship. There is a pretty clear understanding now that periodontal disease is a side effect of diabetes, and there are quite a few insurance companies now are reimbursing providers to provide periodontal care for their diabetes patients to help them manage their disease, because they're both inflammatory diseases. We're trying to understand more about how inflammation might link gum disease and other kinds of systemic diseases that you know, are inflammatory in nature. So it's just fascinating work, you know, when we're learning more every day about this.
Mary Otto is my guest, if you've just joined us, author of the book Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. She's a former Washington Post journalist and has been investigating this area, oral health in the U.S. for many years, and we'd like to have you join our conversation. Do your teeth have a story to tell? Perhaps they've altered your life, either for the better or for the worse, in some way. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Roughly a third of people living in the United States face significant barriers, even to the most basic dental care. Mary, I wanted to talk in a moment about some of the other aspects that we don't normally directly connect with poor dental care. You mentioned the pain, but also social stigma can be connected with low educational achievement, also even job prospects. I want to get to those in a moment, but I want to invite Pete Damiano on our program to join us, University of Iowa professor of preventative and community dentistry, also director of the University of Iowa Public Policy Center. Pete, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Ben.
Zoom in on Iowa. Mary's been providing sort of a national big picture for us. What about Iowa? What can you tell us in terms of, well, I guess to start off with the financial aspects of who are the haves and the have-nots in Iowa in terms of dental care?
Right. And Iowa is pretty much a reflection of many of the things that Mary has been talking about. Some things we may be a little better than the nation, some things, you know, pretty comparable. But this idea of oral health disparities, which is really what Mary is talking about, very much does affect lower income, underserved, underrepresented populations much more heavily than those who are wealthier. There is definitely an income disparity issue. There are some urban-rural issues, not as many in Iowa as in some places that I think are a little more frontier-rural. But there are some places that, you know, access is going to be a little bit more challenging. From a geographic perspective, And I think when, you know, when we talk about access to care, I think that one of the things that's really important right away, there's many layers to that. One is the financial aspect, which is going to be whether you have dental insurance. And if you don't have insurance, do you have the money to be able to pay for it? Geographic access is another component of that, whether there's either somebody close by or that you have adequate transportation. But then there's also language, cultural issues, and a lot of other things can affect whether someone has access to care and whether they can get off of work to be able to go. And then there's also whether you have insurance or not, is there a provider in your area who's going to accept that insurance? And that's where coverage on Medicaid can come in, where you may have Medicaid coverage for something, and that was what happened in that Diamante Driver case, but they couldn't find a dentist that would accept that Medicaid coverage. So even though they had actually very good, Medicaid provides excellent coverage in terms of the benefits, but the reimbursement tends to be low because states don't want to increase their taxes to be able to pay more. And then thus, in many places, dentists don't participate and don't see patients. And so the access isn't there even though you've got coverage.
Mm-hmm. Now, sort of in an arc in terms of, well, coming up to 2017, are we, Pete, getting better or is the disparity growing? What are the trends you see here?
I mean, in general, the disparities have been getting worse over the years. There were some changes that happened with the Affordable Care Act when that came in that did make it better, particularly in the state of Iowa. When they did the Medicaid expansion and we added about 170,000 more people with insurance coverage, Medicaid coverage, and the state of Iowa opted to have dental as a part of that. And some of that actually came from our research at the Public Policy Center, where we had shown that in the previously uninsured population that were in a program called Iowa Care previously, their number one chronic health condition were oral health problems, and their self-rating of their oral health status was much, much worse than even adults in Medicaid. And so the state determined that, yes, we need to provide dental care for these people. They came up with a unique dental wellness plan approach we can talk about if you want to. But basically, a lot of people were able to get dental care, at least initial emergency coverage and preventive care that they weren't able to before, in addition to other adults in Medicaid in Iowa that do have comprehensive care.
Mm-hmm. Mary, chime in here on how you see the ACA changing the oral health care picture here in the U.S.
Well, that was just a great, great summary, Pete. I'm so grateful to hear about what you're doing there. And he's right. As he said, the Affordable Care Act did open up possibilities with Medicaid expansion in many states, also with by encouraging innovations in delivery of dental care, getting like our safety net clinics, a network of clinics across the country, federally qualified health care centers and other similar types of clinics to add dental care to the services that they've already provided, so people can get dental care along with other care in the same place. Workforce initiatives, getting trained hygienists to go out to public health settings like schools and nursing homes to visit with patients and look at them, serve them, give them the preventive care they need and maybe get them to a dental office if they need more extensive help. Some of the conversations that went on in the larger healthcare reform discussion about the triple aim, getting better care to more patients at lower cost, was starting to enter the conversation about dental care too, prevention, new ways of looking at getting care and delivering it. Very, very interesting and useful things. Teledentistry in some cases, like telemedicine, where the dentist may be in one place and the dental hygienists are out in the more far-flung areas of the community, providing care and consulting with the dentist. Really interesting things.
Pete Damiano.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. The delivery system, when we've talked about the Affordable Care Act many times previously, we've tended to focus on the insurance coverage and then just sort of mention the major delivery system changes that are going on. And that's generally under the heading of what are called accountable care organizations and trying to have healthcare systems provide population-level care. Some of them are being very creative and including a dental component. There aren't a huge number of them, but there's an interesting one up in Hennepin County in Minneapolis where they have a Medicaid ACO up there, and they've recognized that, and Mary's talked about this in her book, about all the emergency room dental care that goes on, and we've done a lot of research in that area and published on that area, that there's a lot of money wasted because people go to an emergency department for a dental problem where they can't get definitive care. They're just getting painkillers and antibiotics. And like in Diamante's driver's case, not all of that. But in Minnesota, they actually tried to then loop the dental part to be included as a part of that. And if they came in for that, try to get them triaged over to a dental clinic so they can actually get comprehensive and definitive care.
Pete Damiano with us from the University of Iowa. Mary Otto, author of Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health Care in America, with us this hour as we discuss dental care, oral health. Perhaps you have a story or a question. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Davenport. Elizabeth, listening in Davenport. What spurred you to call in, Elizabeth? Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. I used to look at a women's health clinic, and we had a very active connection with a program trying to get our prenatal patients into some dental care early, because it was my understanding that there was a connection between poor dental care, poor dental hygiene, and preterm labor or birth. Is that true?
There has been some work that's been working in that area. My understanding, the research is not necessarily as definitive as some would like in that area, but the goal of trying to have pregnant women have a healthy mouth is absolutely a very positive. And there's something called the window of infectivity theory that says when a baby is born, they have no bacteria. I mean, they don't. They have no bacteria in their mouth yet, and that they get the bacteria populated by the mom, and they've done genetic testing to do that. And if the mom's mouth tends to be healthier, you're going to be having healthier bacteria given to the baby. And if the mom is not, their mouth isn't as healthy. And then all the healthy habits about preventing early childhood caries or baby bottle tooth decay, so the mom knows how to feed the child properly and wean them off of the bottle by age one, and other things like that, which can be done during that prenatal time period.
Elizabeth, thanks for your call from Davenport.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Michelle. Michelle calling from North Iowa. Hi, Michelle. Do you have a story to tell connected with teeth or a question?
I am a Medicaid patient.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Northern Iowa, Minnesota, Iowa border.
Yep.
North of Mason City. I would have to travel to Waterloo in order to get a routine dental appointment. I have in the past had to pay cash for abscess teeth and for a missing filling, which on my disability is a struggle for me. Prior to my disability, I worked as an emergency room nurse, and I would have to triage patients for dental pain, for abscesses, and was unable to find appointments anywhere locally. I would have to send them up to Minneapolis for their abscesses and for tooth pain.
Wow.
So it has been a huge struggle just for me personally and for patients I was taking care of in the past.
Thank you so much for your perspective, for calling in, Michelle, in North Iowa. There you have it, Mary and Pete, a perfect example, former ER nurse who's seen it firsthand as a medical practitioner, but also someone now receiving Medicaid, has to travel. If you don't know the geography of Iowa, north of Mason City is a long ways to get to Waterloo for her care.
Wow. Yeah, and she's one of many millions of Americans who face those kinds of barriers, and it's a very difficult thing. I mean, much of dental care in this country is provided, you know, through the private practice system. And dentists, when they get out of dental school, you know, a lot of them have $250,000 worth of debt. You know, they have to go out and open a practice, invest in equipment, hire staff, and they tend to locate their practices in places they hope will provide a good return on their investments, and those are usually more affluent metropolitan areas. but that means there's a serious maldistribution, you know, in right. terms of dental care and places to find it, which can be a real burden, like Michelle just described. It could be almost overwhelming for a lot of people.
Pete, explain what you think is going on in Michelle's area there in North Iowa. How does she end up in a place as a Medicaid recipient where she has to travel 70 miles to get basic dental care? What's going on?
Well, part of it could be that there were no dentists in the area. We know in Mason City there are, and at the University of Iowa we've done a pretty good job of populating the state with dentists. However, there still are areas that are underrepresented, but in her case, it was probably more likely that there was just no one willing to see someone on Medicaid, in part because of the low reimbursement rates, and then you have to travel far, and then you end up with spending a whole lot of money. When we looked at this, as you know, a lot of our research on the medical side, too, at the Public Policy Center, I think it was 2 years ago, the Medicaid program spent $7 million on care for dental problems in an emergency room that's, again, non-definitive. So basically that $7 million that you could say in some ways are wasted. That's not the trauma and other kinds of things like that. And so if you could redistribute that money, you know, in theory, raise reimbursement rates and other things, that would be great to have more people. And the program has tried some different things over the years, but it's still not where we would want it to be in terms of the levels of dentist participation in the program.
Mm-hmm. Mary, you wanted to jump in quickly. We have a break coming up, but please do jump in.
No, those were really good points. Another thing people are looking at in some states is ways to extend care out to these smaller communities that may not be able to support sufficient numbers of dentists to treat all the Medicaid patients that need care in these places.
Okay. Quickly, Pete.
Yeah. So Mary had mentioned earlier about the virtual dental home. There's some really interesting things going on in California with a colleague of ours where he's sending a hygienist into schools with portable equipment so that you can telehealth to a dentist to do the diagnosis and then refer back to provide the treatment if necessary.
Pete Damiano is with us of the University of Iowa. Mary Otto, author of Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health Care in America. We have to take a short break, and we'll be back, and we'll talk about other aspects, maybe cultural aspects. The social stigma of having poor teeth can lead to low educational achievement, even stunted job prospects. Perhaps you have a story to tell. 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps you remember this, Little Shop of Horrors from 1986. We had to put this in here. Steve Martin. We'll be back in just a moment. Here's a little bit of that scene from A Little Shop of Horrors.
Things I did. Like shooting puppies with a BB gun. I'd poison guppies when I was done. I'd find a pussycat, bash its hair. That's when my mama said.
What did she say?
She said, my boy, I think someday you'll find a way. Make your natural tendencies pay.
You'll be a dentist. You have a talent for causing pain. Some be a dentist. People will pay you to be.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today talking about oral health, dental care. Mary Otto is with us, author of Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. Also with us, Pete Damiano, professor at the University of Iowa of Preventative and Community Dentistry, also director of the University of Iowa Public Policy Center, inviting you this hour to tell us, do your teeth have a story to tell? How have the state of your teeth, access to dental care, shaped the course of your life or a loved one? 1-866-780-9100. Email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. As we guessed before the show, a significant number of people chiming in with their stories, their questions. We want to get to those in just a moment to our listener questions. But Mary Otto, you write in your book about things we don't normally connect with having poor oral health. That can lead to problems. Smiling, for instance. Tell us about what you find out that was perhaps surprising or would surprise most people being connected with problems in the dental area.
Well, it's so interesting. Yeah, we do tend to look at oral health through a moral lens. I mean, we've talked a lot about the lack of care in, you know, in this country and the millions of Americans who lack care, but we're also a country that, you know, has the is known for the American smile or the Hollywood smile even. And many, many millions of Americans who have access to the system not only, you know, have routine care, but they spend many thousands of dollars sometimes on cosmetic elective procedures to make their smiles even more perfect and white and bright to look like movie stars. And this tradition has gone back to Depression-era Hollywood. In fact, when some of the very first movie stars got their perfect teeth with these snap-on Hollywood veneers, they were called, that a dentist named Charles Pincus created. The cosmetic dental boom has, you know, really took off in the 1980s with the invention of all kinds of new products, new kinds of veneers, and now people spend thousands of dollars on smile makeovers, and they sometimes use these medical credit cards to pay for them, which really came into use in the 1990s. So on the one hand, we have these Hollywood smiles and the social six, which are the front six teeth that are considered a real status symbol for people who are up and coming around the world now. So people who have less perfect teeth feel ashamed, and they are looked at as less, you know, they're looked at through a moral lens. And a Harris poll commissioned by the American Dental Association kind of put a finger on this. They concluded that one out of three low-income Americans avoid smiling.
Mm.
Shame is common among these people who oftentimes have lacked, you know, routine care throughout their lives. But when you're reluctant to smile, it can have an impact on how employable you are, especially in a lot of entry-level jobs, which, you know, they're considered customer-facing positions at like a retail store or a counter at a restaurant or some place where you have to kind of meet and greet the public. Of course, the company wants the brightest and shiniest smile to represent its company. And it also affects the way people advance socially, too. I mean, you know, finding a partner. It can have a lifelong impact on someone's chances of moving through the world.
So many people wanting to get in on our conversation. Pete Damiano, to that point that Mary just addressed there, and then we'll go to our callers.
Right. There's sort of two sides to that. There's the one that because of this influx in the amount of cosmetic dentistry that's being done, because of both a change in dental materials, which makes it easier. Dentists like to do it. It's a lot of fun. I like to do it when I do it. But at the same time, that takes up a lot of capacity. So then being a real doctor, if you will, the way I think of it, and taking care of disease, there's not as much space, if you will. But then there's the flip side from the patient perspective. If you don't have it done and you don't have that pretty smile, and insurance generally does not cover that, whether you've got insurance or Medicaid or no insurance, then you're paying out of pocket for something that's very expensive, and it's another indication of that oral health disparity.
Right, and you see that, Pete Damiano, you're a dentist. You see dental patients once a week in addition to your job as a professor and director of the UI Public Policy Center. So you see it every
sure.
week?
Yeah, see it all the time.
Okay, let's go. Our phones are jammed. We want to get to as many people as possible. I'll ask both our guests and our listeners calling in to be concise so we can accommodate as many possible people this half hour. Yet Heather is with us in Iowa City. Hi, Heather. What's on your
Hi.
Mind? Yeah, have you
Hi.
What have you experienced?
I just want to give a shout out to the Iowa City Mobile Dental Clinic that went to the local nursing home that my parents live in. My parents have had a lifetime of dental neglect because they lived at poverty their whole lives and never had the advantage to even go to a dentist for decades. The mobile clinic came to their low-income nursing home, and both my parents got dentures for the first time in their lives. And my parents can now eat food that they could not eat before. My dad had chronic stomach problems because he couldn't chew his food properly, and that's all resolved. They're off medication that they had been on for decades because they couldn't, they didn't have good teeth, and they couldn't eat, and they couldn't, there was a wide variety of foods they couldn't eat that they now can. And I am so grateful to that dental clinic that went to the nursing home and took care of my parents in a way that I just couldn't do, and they could not do for themselves.
Wow,
so
Heather.
Thank you very much.
Heather, I hear the gratitude in your voice. Thank you so much. Mary, what
yeah.
a testimonial there to what dental poor teeth can make a difference, as well as having them repaired. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of seniors face that issue. You know, Medicare has never included routine dental coverage. And, you know, none of us, you know, can take our dental benefits for granted when we retire. If we,
no.
you know, so, yeah, that's an enormous point that you made.
And in your book, you step back, and Pete, do jump in on this too, but how did we come to see our teeth as something separate from our bodies when we say, okay, you go to a doctor for medical care, whatever else, you go to your general practitioner, and then these teeth are, your teeth are something separate, Mary.
Yeah, I was working in Maryland, you know, for the Washington Post when I got interested in this subject, and I was really surprised to find out that this gap was really formalized in 1840 in Baltimore, Maryland, and that's the year that the world's first dental college was opened. And it was opened by these two dentists. In those days, dentistry was thought of more as a trade. You know, it was you kind of learned your skills and kind of went out on the road and traveled from town to town, usually set up a temporary office in a hotel or a tavern and did a lot of extractions mostly. But these two dentists they thought dentistry was worthy of a better, you know, standing in society, and they went to the medical school in Baltimore and asked the physicians if they considered adding a formal course to the medical instruction. And as the story goes, the physicians told them no, that dentistry really wasn't of any interest to them. So these two dentists started this dental college, and other colleges opened around the country. They started a professional society, and they had a peer-reviewed, you know, journal for dentistry, and it became a separate profession from the rest of healthcare. And, you know, that's how it's been ever since. And that event is remembered as the historic rebuff. And it's still talked about in dental history, and it's kind of used to explain and defend the separate dental system that we have. And it still shapes, you know, the fact that our dental records are kept separately from our medical records, and dental and medical researchers tend to work separately, and our dentists look at our mouths and our teeth and gums, and the physicians look at our bodies kind of from the tonsils south. It's still a serious and real divide.
Pete Damiano, does it make sense to do a better job of integrating dental care and medical care, and are there ways to get there?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And Mary's captured the history well, and sort of some of the things that got us to where we are today. As a part of the Affordable Care Act and some other efforts that have been going on, these aren't brand new, but there are some more significant ones that have been happening about trying to integrate dental care and medical care together. Part of that is with the technology and improvement in health information technology systems and be able to communicate more effectively between dentists and physicians. We're clearly not there where we need to be, but in certain places, it's better. In dentistry, we have traditionally been this solo private practice-oriented group, basically lack of a group. There are now growing numbers of larger dental service organizations, they've called, and some of them are very well integrated among themselves, and you've got larger groups so they can coordinate care and think about providing care to populations in ways that they couldn't before, and measuring quality and other things, but then also integrating with their medical colleagues depending on where they are. So, for example, the Marshfield Clinic in Wisconsin, they've built a new dental clinic specifically in mind of collaborating with their medical colleagues and sharing information back and forth. The American Dental Association has done some studies and have shown that you could save hundreds of millions of dollars if the dentists were more involved in hypertension screening, diabetic screening, and other types of cholesterol screening. flip side of that, physicians are being asked to do more on a prevention side, particularly with kids, because they see them before the dentist does, to try to identify the really high-cost kids with the baby bottle tooth decay, the early childhood caries, who are going to end up in a hospital operating room and can cost tens of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to an email from a listener. This one from Dubuque. I am a dental clinic manager in Dubuque, writes this listener. Dental health is such an important component to overall health. Unfortunately, insurance tends to dictate what is treated and how care is offered to these patients. For example, we just recently met a new patient. I will call her Beth. She's 24, a new mother, has not been to a dentist in several months, even though she has insurance coverage through her own mother. Her mother indicated to me that she did not want Beth to have fluoride treatment during her dental hygiene appointment because, quote, insurance does not pay for it. Much to my sadness, Beth had dental decay on every single tooth, was in need of more than basic restorative care. Approximately $5,000 worth of care was needed, but a fluoride treatment of $29 would not be covered by insurance and therefore would not be taken by Beth. I wish insurance could have covered the fluoride treatments because they may have helped prevent thousands of dollars of uncomfortable restorations. It is so upside down, writes our listener there, too. Wow. How much of that, Mary, is going on where if we did a better job of preventative care, we could have avoided huge bills and a lot of pain and misery for people?
Well, this has been a kind of a recurring theme. It certainly is one of those cases where an ounce of prevention is worth, you know, so much treatment. And fluoride is a simple thing. It's even, as Pete was saying, more and more physicians and even nurses in some communities are being reimbursed by Medicaid to provide these treatments, even to the very small children, because, as he said, they're far more likely to see very young Medicaid children and all young children than dentists. And to get the children off to a very good start by providing these fluoride treatments to their first teeth, doing some oral health education with their mothers and fathers about good feeding habits and how to keep their baby's teeth clean. You know, these are such important things, and they really can give the child a good start, you know, and prevent so much of this disease.
How do we change this dynamic looking forward? We have less than 10 minutes of the program. We didn't talk too much about the dentists who are really in for the most lucrative end of the deal, cosmetic dentistry, not very connected to health, but to looks. But you can't blame dentists who go for that. You're $200,000 or $250,000 in debt just coming out of dental school. Who can blame you for wanting to pay off your debts, right, Pete?
Right. I mean, to me, that should be a component of a dental practice. But as I mentioned earlier, you still need to be a doctor, and you're still not just a cosmetologist. And so seeing patients with active oral disease, whether it's dental caries, dental cavities, or gum disease, periodontal disease, those are both conditions that are not self-limiting, that are only going to get worse if there isn't, in this case, surgical intervention. That's also where that idea of prevention comes in. Water fluoridation, for example, was listed by the CDC as one of the top 10 disease-preventing activities of the 20th century. Still very important. There are more sources of fluoride out there, so we've adjusted the amount in the water down, actually, so it's not as high as it once was, but that is still very critical. The office-based prevention is critical as well, but also the oral health education, everything else that goes with it, like we were talking about with new moms and with young children, all of those things are critical, combined with, you know, the idea of what the practitioner is doing in the office to be able to see the patients, you know, who are lower income. I've been working on that issue of Medicaid participation for 30 years, going to back my first work in California and then in Iowa, Missouri, a number of Texas, a number of other states. And it is challenging because the state legislatures don't want to pay more. They don't want to raise taxes so the dentists can get paid more. The dentists are saying we're getting paid 40 cents on the dollar to see these people in Medicaid. And, you know, there's a vicious cycle there. And somehow we need to break through that for the benefit and the oral health benefit of all of these people who really have the bulk of the disease.
Okay, we've got 5 minutes to for you two to tell us how we get there. Mary Otto, remind our listeners who perhaps weren't listening at the beginning, you for this book, you undertook a multi-year investigation into the state of oral health in the U.S. What conclusions did you come to as far as, you know, when we look at the disparity here, a third of the people living in the U.S. facing significant barriers to even the most basic dental health care? What seems also politically what's within reach in terms of closing this gap, getting more people better dental care?
Well, we've talked about it a little bit throughout the show, and that is, you know, getting care to patients. I think that's a really interesting and important approach. You know, this 100 million or more Americans who face barriers getting into what's largely a private practice, carefully controlled system. If there's a way to spread care out and get more dental practitioners, not necessarily even dentists, but nurse, dental hygienists and other kinds of dental workers into clinics and community settings, WIC centers, you know, schools, nursing homes, you know, just that spoken wheel approach to spreading care out to the people who aren't getting into the dental offices, very promising. Also, as Pete pointed out, prevention. You know, it's so much less costly. Water fluoridation, and some 3/4 of communities have water fluoridation, but it's less likely to have optimally fluoridated water in a rural place. You know, some communities still don't have it in urban areas. Some big states have many communities that are missing water fluoridation, and simple home care treatment, appreciation of that. There are huge budget cuts on the horizon for all these programs, and those are things we have to pay attention to. I mean, Dr. David Satcher called oral disease a silent epidemic, and part of the reason is it doesn't get mentioned often, and we're talking now, you know, President Trump has proposed $800 billion in cuts to Medicaid over the next 10 years. Congress has looked at $600 billion in cuts. So oral health advocates are very worried about the dental entitlements, you know, that now exist under Medicaid, and the Affordable Care Act advances that have been made, you know, with the repeal and replace efforts that are going on. So all this is at a very interesting time, and we have to pay attention and keep talking about dental care in the context of the healthcare system, you know, in the months to come.
Pete Damiano, we have a couple minutes left. What do you have to say looking forward to add to what Mary said?
Yeah, I think she described a lot of those things very well. When you're looking ahead to the ACA, the Medicaid cuts are going to be very substantial in terms of the potential impact to dental insurance coverage among those people who need it the most. As I mentioned, our research showed that in that uninsured population of adults, you know, the burden was huge. And that affects, again, overall health status, ability to get a job, all of those things. And it's unfortunate that we tend to look at insurance almost in a punitive way. And now there's this talk about work requirements and all of these things that are just going to make it harder for people to get insurance. But 70-80% of the uninsured people are working people and their families. They just happen to work in a place where they don't get insurance coverage. If you don't have insurance, and then there's even a greater proportion without dental insurance, you have no ability basically to buy it. It's very, very difficult to buy an individual dental insurance policy. Then you've got the potential impacts of ACA cuts to the community health centers, which Mary mentioned earlier, have been expanded both under the ACA and actually under President George Bush previously, where they, for the first time, new construction and community health centers had to have a dental component. And so that's a place where low-income people, but not even just low-income, but, you know, can go to receive dental care. But it's never going to replicate or have enough capacity. The private practitioners are going to have to be a part of the solution.
I wanted to be uplifted at the end of this program. Pete or Mary, I don't know if you did it.
Sorry.
Well, okay. We'll go from there, see what comes. But thank you very much for your expertise. Pete Damiano is with us, has been with us this hour, University of Iowa Professor of Preventative and Community Dentistry, Director of the University of Iowa Public Policy Center. Pete, thanks for coming in.
Yeah,
you've been
a pleasure,
such a good
Ben.
Explainer, and in this case, a little different context. Thank you for giving us your practical as well as your, I guess, professorial view on this. Mary Otto, Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and The Struggle for Oral Health Care in America is her book. She's the oral health topic leader for the Association of Healthcare Journalists. Quickly, Mary, what do you hope will come out of this book and efforts to raise awareness here?
That's exactly what I hope. I do hope it helps raise awareness. And conversations like the one we've had this hour just give me a lot of hope.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mary Otto.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I just want to thank Mary for raising the issue.
Okay. Thanks from Pete to Mary. There, we didn't quite get it completely on. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.
And you want to find something to do, you brush your teeth. You brush your teeth. And when you wake up in the morning, it's 2:45, and your mind starts humming, twiddly-dee. You brush your teeth. You brush your teeth. When you wake up in the morning, it's 4:45, and you think you hear a knock on your door. You brush your teeth.